How's it going? And welcome to episode 239 of On the Wire, a proud member of the Pictureless Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, per usual, joined by Kevin Hasting. And this is the first show we've done in a long time, Kevin, where we're not going to talk about news at all. Because we talked about all of the possible news on our last episode, and I'm sure something has happened since that last episode. But you know what? It's the holidays. We don't need to, you know, have our eyes in the news at all times. Let's just play some fun games as we are, you know, looking at the different draft styles. So how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. We brought back Adam, you may find this hard to believe, but I was excited when I got your message that we would be playing your favorite game on this episode.
Yes, of course. I'm going to it's in the episode title, so it's not as a big surprise, but we're going to play Ask. For those who don't remember the game, it is, you know, our version of MFK. It's ASK, avoid, stream, keep. I'm going to put a slightly different tinge on it for this episode as you're
drafting. We did it last year as well.
Yeah. Last year with Ask, I always made it like kind of like the guidelines, right? It's like, these are the, you know, if you're avoiding them, you're not drafting them even in a draft and hold. If you're streaming you're drafting them in a fab league and in a void. I mean, a keep, you obviously are drafting in the gladiator. So it's similarly, that's still the case here. But what I really want you to consider as you're making these selections is not so much guys that you would avoid or stream or keep, is where would you draft? Like, where would you draft these guys? So you're going to have groups of three at different positions that are all currently being drafted at an ADP similar to each other. So I'm not just picking a guy that's going, you know, 20th and then 200th. Right. All of their ADPs are between around 300 to about 450 or so, 475. And this is all drafts that are happening in the month of December so far. So about 2.5-3 weeks worth of drafts in just the month of December. And I picked that specifically one because it's recent. And also, there are a lot of different types of drafts happening right now. So that ADP is meshed together based on a lot of different things. Gladiators are winding down, so there's a lot of gladiator in that ADP. A lot of draft and holds have been happening, and people are starting to at least think about their fab leagues. And that's what I want you to think about with these players as you're making these draft picks. Where would, if I have to draft one these three guys, what format would I feel the most comfortable drafting? Now, you have to put one in a gladiator, you have to put one in a draft and hold, and you have to put one in a fab league, and whatever reason, and because there's a lot of different strategies to use when doing these drafts, like the value proposition of a multi-eligible player, you know, goes up at least, you know, a round or two in a draft and hold compared to maybe a fab league, or definitely more so than in a gladiator later in your draft. It doesn't really matter. It's like, they're just going to go in whatever position. They're never going to move them around. And, you know, guys that you think are never going to get hurt, maybe they bump up a couple rounds in a gladiator because you can, you know, you're less worried about losing those games, those innings, whatever. So I know you already understand the rules. We can get right into it. Do you have any questions, comments, concerns before we jump in?
I think I'm good to go, Adam.
All right. So I'm going to start off with the one that stood out to me right away, right when I was like scrolling through ADP. I'm like, all right, who do I start with here? They were like back to back to back, these three guys. We're going to start in the outfield. And they're all younger outfielders who either have made their debut and struggled, or or thought they would make their debut and instead they struggled before making the debut or got hurt. And that's Chase DeLauder for Cleveland, fitting that bill. The other two, Cam Smith in Houston, which was all the talk of the town going into draft, like March draft season last year. And then Jordan Walker, top prospect, or at one point top prospect for St. Louis, who has struggled mightily to be fantasy relevant in most scenarios, but they are all being drafted pretty close together with an ADP of about 480-ish, 490-ish for all of these guys. So Jordan Walker. And so they're all mostly available for Gladiators, right? Like they're obviously they're going a little bit later than your the end of your Gladiator rounds. And that's the other point. These all these guys that we're talking about are all going to be available at some point in all of these formats. It's just whether or not you feel comfortable in those in each format. So Cam Smith of Houston, Jordan Walker of St. Louis, and Chase DeLauder of Cleveland in the outfield position. Where are you drafting these guys?
This one, this is a good one. It is because, all right. I have given up on Jordan Walker.
There it is.
Which means for the purpose of this, he's my fab league player, so I can get rid of him. I'd be stuck with him on the other two teams. But there's a chance, right? Still young, but the reason I'm giving up is his strikeout rate keeps going up, not getting better. Right? It went up again in 2025. And his BABIP went up 60 points and he performed much worse. So yeah, until I see something from Jordan Walker, I'm out. But if I had to draft him, it would be in a fab league. Take that shot. And then it'd be my last round pick or close to it. It could work out, but if it doesn't, I can replace him. Now this gets tricky because I still have more confidence in Cam Smith than Jordan Walker. He wasn't well below league average in 2025. A 90 WRC plus is close. If I knew Chase DeLauder was going to stay healthy, you don't even have to tell me what level he's going to play at. If you told me he was going to be healthy, he would be my Gladiator play. And I think that's what I'm going to lean and hope for it because there is a chance that Cam Smith is short side of platoon. I don't think they'll go that route yet. But if he performs much worse than last season, then that's a possibility. So, yep, this one was a really tough one for me. And that is kind of the way I was leaning when I was looking at it a few hours ago. And I think I'm sticking with it. In spite of the injury risk, DeLauder is my Gladiator play here.
Well, DeLauder at this point, I agree with you. If you knew he was going to be healthy all season and you said you quantified it by saying, and you didn't even have to tell me what level he'd be. I mean, you'll have to, because if he's healthy all season, he's in Cleveland all season.
Right. Maybe not the first couple weeks, but
fair. Well, at least, Roster Resource thinks he's breaking camp. Everyday outfielder. It's just kind of, got to be healthy to start that season there. But yeah, I think that there's, it's just you have to balance out the risk. Like, how do you trust? I trust Cam Smith to be healthy all season, but it comes with the caveat of does Houston, play him as much as you need him to in a Gladiator? You either lose out on, there's a lot more risk and reward, right? Like,
right.
If Jason Lauder is hurt, he's probably out longer than the time missed that Cam Smith would have in the platoon, right? But if he's playing every day, then obviously that's there. All right, good one. Good one to start off with. Let's get right back into, let's get out of the outfield, get out of the lineup and go into pitching. This was an interesting bunch because they're all very different, right? They're all the threesome of the pitchers that I'm going to throw out there, but they are going close to back-to-back-to-back. As far as pitchers go, in ADP right now, and that is going to be Jonah Tong, prospect for, he made his debut, but I would still consider him a prospect for the New York Mets. Hyusei Kikuchi, who is now with, the Angels, I believe. And then the third one on my list as I go on my tags is your boy here, Seth Lugo, still with your Kansas City Royals. Obviously, each one of them had their struggles in the fact that Tong is so young. You don't know what to expect. Kikuchi is trying to like come back. And then Lugo, I don't know what happened with Lugo last year, to be honest. So where you have to draft all these guys, where do you feel most comfortable with each of them?
This one,
I didn't say you had to be comfortable with any of them, but you have to draft them.
This one is fun. These are all fun, actually. But Jonah Tong, we don't even know if he's in a rotation.
Right,
so he's not a gladiator play. And he could be draft and hold. We have talked about that in past seasons, having guys that we and that we're going to need replacements. We know we're going to have guys get hurt. And I think we can be fairly confident that later in the season, Tong is in the rotation, but we don't know. So I think he has to be my fab play. And then Seth Lugo, I'm more confident in his performance than Kikuchi. So he's my gladiator play and Kikuchi is my draft and hold play. And I will be hypocritical on some of these for different reasons. I'll flip-flop my reason when we talk about another set of three. I know that's going to happen throughout this episode.
No,
But when these three particular players, I think, and part of this is I have really gotten away from it, and maybe I'm swaying too far the other way, but I used to be way too frivolous with my roster spots in a draft and hold. Oh, I can take a chance on this guy. I have 50 spots. I have learned that those 50 spots are all very valuable. So I'm not going to take Tong there.
Yeah. I mean, of course it's always easy to say like, oh, I'm going to play for the upside here.
Yeah.
You only have so many of them. We talk about this every single off season. But you know, gun to your head type of situation, like maybe you don't know what in this very small sample size, you don't know what the rest of your roster looks like. You don't know what the rest of your draft has already looked at. So you have to assume you've already used at this point, you've already used some risky picks in a draft and hold. So I understand, you know, Tong not being, especially at this point in the draft, ADP about all these guys, anywhere between 459 and 470, being where they're going to be drafted. All right. Well, yeah. I mean, the pitching is more interesting. In that we're only going to do two sets of pitchers, one set of relievers. We just did our starters here, but just because those roster spots, especially in a draft and hold, are so much more valuable, right? And it's like knowing that you have no moves to make. Gladiators, you're just like you're tying your hands. There's nothing you can do, right? But you're still going to be able to make moves in a draft and hold. You just have to stay within your own roster. And so to know that you're going to lose guys to injury, so you need to know that the guys that you have on your bench, and at this point these are bench pieces that you're drafting, that you're going to be able to trust, that you're going to be able to pull those guys in at any given point. You don't know that about Jonah Tong. As exciting as it might be, and as much fab as you would spend on him in season, or as people did last season, even late in the game, it's just a play that it's hard to make, especially if you have to assume you've already used your risky roster spots. All right, let's go to shortstop as I quickly change my filters here. And this was an interesting, this was a middle infield was a hard one to do because I really tried to pick guys that only had single position eligibility, right? Shortstop a little bit easier than second base. And so we're going to mention these three guys here that are going pretty close to each other, about 100 overall pick difference, but pretty much back to back to back as far as shortstops go, right? Kevin McGonigal in Detroit with the current highest ADP of around just a little higher than 300. After that, going back to St. Louis with JJ Weatherholt with the 331 ADP. And then, as we talked about on the last episode, Anthony Volpe probably missing, not probably, well, most likely missing at least the first month of the season for the New York Yankees, being drafted as such with an ADP of about 419. So between Volpe, who obviously has the most experience out of these guys, JJ Weatherholt, not sure, you know, what his status is going to be for opening day, as far as like what roster he'll be on, and then Kevin McGonigal, kind of a mix of both. What's your overall thoughts on these three guys at the shortstop position, obviously also middle infield position, in most roster builds?
How many plate appearances are each of these three going to get? They're not going to tell me
that's the question, right?
They're not going to tell me that, huh? So what makes this really intriguing is two of these three guys are not even on 40 mans. So, but, you know, is Detroit going into the season? Do they think that, right? Do they think they're going to get what they got out of Javier Baez last year again? Roster Resource has Zach McKinstry as a starting shortstop versus right-handed pitching. I kind of doubt that's what we see. I think we'd probably see Baez in there a little more often than just short side platoon. But I would have to think. See, the Rangers have, when healthy, we've said that a lot this show, they have a much more set shortstop, right? In Corey Seager. So some rumors he may be on the move. I don't think that's the case. I think what I'm getting at is I really don't want, obviously, in a Gladiator, and as we were just talking a few minutes ago, I'm getting to this point in a draft and hold. I don't want to take up a roster spot with a guy that's not playing. Obviously can't do that in a Gladiator and expect to perform well. So I'm trying to decide between the two prospects first. I think, as crazy as it sounds, I asked you earlier, and we think Volpe is going to be back in early May. I think he has to be my Gladiator play here. I think Volpe gets more plate appearances than either of the other two. So then my question is, which one do I think comes up quicker? He's going to be my draft and hold play. The other one's going to be my fab guy, so I can get rid of him unless we're really shocked, or really I would hold him maybe for a week or two if they had an amazing spring and we start hearing talk, he's forcing the issue. And yeah, because of what they have available at shortstop, I would guess we would see McGonigal before Walcott. So he's my draft and hold.
Now, what if I told you
way off base here, Adam?
We weren't considering Walcott. We were considering JJ Weatherholt in St. Louis.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I got my W.
All right.
The wrong W.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think McGonigal has the clearer path, I guess, to being called up by Detroit rather than Weatherholt in St. Louis. This was, you know, as I was putting these names together, I'm like, I'm glad, like, I try not to make them easy where it's like, there's only one prospect we're not sure when he's going to get called up. There's right. One elder statesman who, you know, has injury concerns or whatever the case, like, I didn't want to make them obvious. It's like, yeah, you got to make it. And they're going back to back to back in drafts. Yeah. So both these guys, both McGonigal and Weatherholt, doesn't matter that they're on the 40 man roster. Like, it doesn't matter that they haven't made their debut yet. They're still being drafted, assuming that they're going to be up soon enough. Right. And yeah, majority, I do a filter, but I would assume a majority of this, of where their average draft position is in the draft and hold, the draft champions in the NFBC 50s, as opposed to the Gladiators. And if I change this to Gladiators only, I bet you they're not even on the board. Let's see. Oh, McGonigal is still, actually, McGonigal goes up. his ADP is higher, lower, higher, whatever. It's at 285 in Gladiators, compared to the over 300 for sure in the when you mesh it all together. And then Weatherholt's at 300. He's also higher. They're both being drafted more aggressively in Gladiators than they are in Draft and Holds or any other format. So there's obviously a certain level of confidence in those drafts or by those draftees or drafters in those two guys. Is that, I mean, more so McGonagall, he's been drafted in 80 drafts compared to Weatherholt only in 73. Do you think that's a mistake, or do you think that there's some kind of level of risk that you have to take in that kind of format? Again, you only have so many risky roster spots in a draft and hold. You have that much less room for error in a risky in with risky roster spots in a Gladiator. But is that a form of strategy? Like, hey, if I need to stand out in the Gladiator, I've got to hit big, especially on one of my later picks.
No, I think if you're, I think we're still hoping that's the case, and that's what we need to happen to spike an overall, but that can't be your focus when you're drafting. I think that just needs to happen organically. You happen to get a little bit lucky, but sticking to your normal philosophies, I think, rather than gearing that way. Yeah, Adam, I had completely written this down wrong. I was looking at Walcott so earlier when I made this comparison. I don't think it changes my answer. The only thing I would take maybe into consideration for Weatherholt is, I mean, St. Louis will probably surprise us and be competitive into the division later into the season than we think they should be. But going into the season, I feel like they're going to be able to give some young guys some playing time. But I'm still going with McGonagall.
All right, yeah. For what it's worth, Walcott being drafted a good 300 picks after all of these other guys.
He's too young.
Also available, though. So, you know, but still being drafted almost as often. Just obviously just in draft and holds, though. All right, we got a few more positions to get through. Well, we've taken too long to do this, so we just got to go ahead and do it, our first break of the episode. All right, let's mix it up. We're not going to stick with one position or two positions. We're going to go with like a whole bunch of position eligibility here. All three of these guys have at least three positions eligible at your disposal when selecting them in your drafts, at least to start the season. Not going to rule out any of these guys gaining another position eligibility. But, you know, at least you got the three no matter what. First name on the list here is Brooks Lee of Minnesota. And then Zach McKinstry staying in Detroit here with Zach McKinstry. And then going to Texas with Josh Smith. All these guys have multi-position eligibility. I believe all of them have corner, middle, and at least Josh Smith also has. Oh, McKinstry has outfield as well. So between Josh Smith and McKinstry, you've got pretty much everything covered. Brooks Lee at least has, you know, middle, corner, and of course second, third, and short. They're all going very similar in spots between. They're all 100 picks apart from each other between 433 and 533 in ADP across all types of drafts. They all play pretty similar roles on their teams in general, with McKinstry probably, you know, getting a little bit of more of a lion's share of playing time. Josh Smith being right with him due to, you know, filling in for injury most of the season in different reasons for different injuries for Texas. Brooks Lee dealing with his own injuries, maybe not filling in for injuries per se. Where are you drafting these guys, or at least where are you feeling the most comfortable for each of them?
I love all three of these guys. As we just talked about Zach McKinstry briefly, I don't believe he's going to be the starting shortstop on a regular basis for Detroit, but he he's going to play. He's going to get his playing time like he did last season. There was a weird thing. He had his numbers were so much better in Detroit than they were on the road. That's not something I typically want to dwell on too much, but they were drastically different. So that does give me a slight concern. I love all three of these guys, all three of them eligible at three different positions, and all three of them available at shortstop and third base. It would come down to in some drafts, do I need the second base eligibility? Do I need the outfield eligibility, or I need the first base eligibility? Because that's the difference between the three players.
Sure.
So I would take that into account. That would depend on the draft. But to be able to split up these three guys for this, I am going to go this way. I'm going to take Brooks Lee and the Gladiator. I think he can improve on that power a little more. That would get him into the 20s in home runs with his regular playing time. Probably the worst of the three lineups is the drawback, but I'd be betting on Brooks Lee doing more. I think we know what Zach McKinstry and Josh Smith are, both valuable players, but Brooks Lee, I think, would be my Gladiator pick. I'm kind of, and this is where I said I would be hypocritical. Zach McKinstry, I think I'm a little more comfortable with his playing time, but he is just, well, no, that does work out. That does work out the way I was saying it. He's my draft and hold player, Zach McKinstry, because he's just, when I think draft and hold, I think of guys like Zach McKinstry, right? Sure. At this point in a draft. And then Josh Smith, I'll go ahead with my fab pick. And this may actually work out because his playing time oftentimes depends on the health of other Texas Rangers. And right now, if we think he's going to go in to the season as Marcus Semien's replacement at second base, that is great. So he started in the season with some playing time. We'll see how that goes. If he's not getting it, I'd let him go. So he's going to be my fab play, but I like all three of these guys, and I would probably draft all three of them in any three format.
My gut was Brooks Lee was going to be like my fab play. But the more I look at him, the more I see that situation. And mainly because he's got plenty of options. So Minnesota mm-hmm. would play that game where, you know, they decide. But who else is playing shortstop for the Minnesota Twins, at least at the major league level? It's not anybody else on this roster. They're not going to move Royce Lewis back to that position. Josh Bell's obviously not filling in at shortstop. There's just not a lot of options, in my opinion, for them to backfill that. And we also say, you know, the shortstop position is the one position that teams don't actually want to platoon, right? You want that guy in there at all times. So unless Brooks Lee actually, you know, falls off a cliff and forces their hand, I don't think those options come into play, at least not very easily. So yeah, I like the Brooks Lee for playing time, because that was gonna be my number one concern for a Gladiator, right? I think McKinstry doesn't have any options. He spent some plenty of time at the top of the lineup for Detroit throughout the course of his time there as well. Not all the time, but he did spend some time up there as well. So there's opportunity there. Josh Smith, same thing with Texas. So I do like the idea of like having somebody who's not only going to be playing every day, even if it's at various positions, but also could be at the top of the lineup to get those extra plate appearances. But even though I think McKinstry doesn't go anywhere, to your point, you know, if McConnell does come up or they can move him around, is not a guarantee that he is an everyday player all season long. So yeah, I think where you got everybody is pretty much in line with where I would have ended up if I had spent a little bit more time beforehand.
I want to add something in here really quick, because we had just talked about some shortstops as well. And then all of these guys are also qualify at shortstop. And then about in the same range, it probably, I should have asked this with the previous one, but these guys were all shortstops as well. But it's more of a rookie we haven't seen yet. Aiden Miller's going right in this range too.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you squeeze him in with these guys?
Oh man.
Or do you?
I mean, it would have been better, I guess, to put in him with McGonagall and
over Volpe. Yeah.
And take Volpe out of that group and put in Miller into that group. I just need to look at the depth chart in Philadelphia.
The reason I'm asking is I didn't realize Aiden Miller was being drafted in this range this high. And now I'm like, what did I miss? What news did I miss?
That's right. You think about that. Yeah. I mean, he obviously doesn't come up anytime soon to play shortstop, but do they move him around? Do they have him come in because Brayton Stott's not doing what he needs to do at second base? Does he become a bench option? Probably not. That's not the type of player that you are trying to develop in Aiden Miller. So he's not on the 40 man. I wish I saw this because he would have been a better name to throw into that grouping.
I'm glad it would have made it even harder.
I mean, that's the point.
It's such a toss up in this situation.
All right, so everybody's favorite position, especially in a draft and hold. You mentioned it earlier. You only want to have three catchers, so I think that's going to play a big role in your decision of where to draft these guys. Freddie Fermin, Sean Murphy, Harry Ford, all these guys. Oh no, Sean Murphy hasn't gone anywhere. It's like all these guys finding new homes as well via trade, via signings, what have you. Harry Ford, as we mentioned earlier or in previous episode, got traded over to Washington. Freddie Fermin no longer with your Kansas City Royals. Sean Murphy obviously still in Atlanta. All of them with playing time question marks at the very least. So obviously you're not drafting any of these. That's the thing. In your Fab League, this is your C2. You're not drafting a C3 in a Fab League. Mm-hmm. And then in Gladiator, same thing. But in draft and hold, you assume that this guy would be your C3. So, again, you do have to draft one of these in a Gladiator, one in a Fab League, and then one in a draft and hold. What do you got?
This is...
Whenever you start with such a long pause, I'm like, oh, I know. I got it. This is a good group.
No, it is. I just don't know what to think with Sean Murphy. Mm-hmm. I think Sean Murphy is, I kind of doubt he gets the much playing time. I don't think he will DH when he's not catching. And I think he's short side platoon catcher. Which of these three format, I don't want to keep using a Fab League as my cop out because I can drop him, right? So I kind of want to give a little credence here to it. I think let's get this out of the way. My Gladiator play is Fermin. I like Camposano as well. I think Fermin gets at least half and maybe a little more, maybe that 60-40 share. When he was Salvador Perez's backup, we were just waiting for Freddie Fermin to get regular playing time. Overall last season, down year at the plate for him, had some big moments in the postseason for San Diego. So of these three guys, he would be my Gladiator. And
the field wouldn't agree, only because I'm looking at the Gladiators draft. And, pretty much all the first 27 catchers off the board are being drafted pretty much in every Gladiator. The next, the 28th catcher is Sean Murphy. Right. And he's being drafted in, of the last 94 completed Gladiators, he's been drafted in 68 of them. And then there's another big cliff, Freddie Fermin, the next Gladiator off the next catcher off the board, only drafted in 37. And then it keeps dropping and dropping. Obviously, Harry Ford you know, with only 17 drafts, lowest on this threesome. But the field is more confident in a gladiator format in Sean Murphy than they are in Freddie Fermin. Do you think that is just based on possible playing time for Sean Murphy or expected playing time for either one?
I think it's a misconception of playing time based on name recognition. I'm sticking with Freddie Fermin for gladiator. I did realize as you were talking that actually my decision is pretty easy here. Sean Murphy would be my draft and hold. I wouldn't have a lot of confidence that he's going to get, like I said, even half of the plate appearances in Atlanta, but that's where I'm putting him because Harry Ford, we need to see if he's going to make this roster or when he makes this roster. So he is, he's my fab play. It's taking a shot and hoping he makes the opening day roster.
His teammate going right pretty much back to back in drafts as well, Kyber Ruiz. Does that make, you know, if I swap out Ruiz for Harry Ford, does that make any difference in your selection process?
Gosh, Ruiz had some huge struggles last season at times. He'd be right there with Sean Murphy where I really don't want him in any league, but I think he probably does play enough that, yeah, I'd slide him. Well, I'd still have Sean Murphy. Yeah, but he's not going to be my gladiator play. So, yep, it would stay.
All right. Let's move to
Make me think, Adam.
That's the whole point, I guess.
I know.
All right, let's move just up one position here to first base. Again, the groupings should all be in the anywhere between 300 to, you know, 450 ADP range. As I try to stall so I can find these guys on the ADP list here. And I tried to get with just players that have single position eligibility as well. So we were looking at first baseman here, Josh Bell, who we just talked about recently signing with Minnesota. Tristan Casas trying to come back with my Red Sox. Red Sox undercut apparently Pete Alonso to play first base. Obviously, he went with Baltimore instead for obvious reasons. So Tristan Casas still seems to be the front runner at first base for Boston. And then Spencer Horwitz in that's the wrong Spencer. Yeah, Pittsburgh. He's in Pittsburgh. He was in Toronto. He was in Toronto before that, though. That was what I was getting confused about. All first base only eligible players, all being drafted really close together. Tristan Casas and Spencer Horwitz back to back, and then slightly before that slightly after that is your Josh Bell of the world as well. Between Casas coming back from injury, Horwitz unclear on role, and then Josh Bell just being, you know, the elder statesman of the group, where are you drafting these guys most comfortably?
Tristan Casas is my fab play here. And that's not because I don't have a spot to put him and I want to be able to get rid of him. It's because he is the upside play. So that is the fab play here. Tristan Casas, I believe. I'll take Spencer Horwitz as my gladiator. I think he sticks in that Pittsburgh lineup in the cleanup spot. They added some other bats as we talked last episode with Brandon Lau and Matt Mangum.
Jake Mangum.
From Tampa there at the top of the lineup. So maybe some more RBI opportunity there for Horowitz. And Josh Bell, you know, he's old, boring. That's draft and hold right there written all over it.
So do you think, you know, we talked about Josh Bell last episode as well because of the signing just happened. Do you think that Horwitz gets more plate appearances than Bell, or do you think just the production would be there to make him more confident in a gladiator over Bell? Because, I mean, I see a path for playing time where he's not going to be in a platoon per se, being the switch hitter, being in that lineup for Josh Bell. Horwitz, at least Jason over at Roster Resource, has him on the strong side of the platoon. With a whole lot of platoons in Pittsburgh being suggested. Yeah. So is it more of a, you know, volume, or is it more of a just production in general?
As crazy as this would have sounded a season ago and may still sound crazy, it's quality lineup for me.
Not ballpark, but lineup, of course. Yeah.
Yep.
So he might play less, but because of everybody around him, there'll be more opportunities to do more with what he's given. That is Spencer Horwitz.
Yep.
All right. We've got three more groupings to get to, and we are going to get to all three of them. But first, we're going to take another quick break. All right. This one's interesting only because, like I said, I try to keep these guys together in their positions. And I did. It was second base was hard to do this because there were to try to keep them together in ADP and to only pick guys that are second base only eligible, because there's a lot of multi-position eligible second baseman or multi-positional eligible players who have second base as one of their positions that kind of fit in this stage of drafts, if you will. And at least one of them, Jake Cronenworth, probably gains first base or regains first base eligibility at some point in the first half of the season as he gets pushed around, especially with the signing of Song that we talked about earlier. But the three names we have here in second base, at least going into draft, because also in Gladiators, it doesn't matter if he gains eligibility, you're not moving him into any other position. Jake Cronenworth in San Diego, Christian Campbell in Boston, and then Andrés Giménez rounding it out here at second base. Where do you feel most comfortable drafting each one of these guys?
Man, I still like Christian Campbell, but I don't. You're the one that should be answering this one, Adam. But I will go that obviously he would not be my Gladiator play, however. So let's go there first. And I have always been an Andrés Giménez fan. And in spite of some of the struggles and injuries he's had, I don't feel that I feel like he's still a nice player and when healthy can perform for us. I haven't in the past been big on Jake Cronenworth, but that was a few years ago when he was a lot more expensive. I think Cronenworth is my Gladiator play. Giménez is my draft and hold play. And this is a combination of Christian Campbell being the high upside play and being kind of a cop out as my fab play.
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine with Christian Campbell as my draft and hold play if I haven't used all my risky roster spots,
right?
That we talked about before. Yep. And it's literally just because there's little to no guarantee that he's on the opening day roster, right?
So let me ask you. Let me phrase the question, spending this back to you in this way, because it would change the answer. Is there a realistic chance that Christian Campbell will still be on my roster at the end of April if I draft him in a fab league, or should I not even consider him there?
Oh, that's a fair question. I think there is, but I think you'll know that before spring training even starts. And okay. I say that because if there's a path for him to be on that roster, it's going to be because they make some other trade, right? They actually trade Jaren Duran, that, you know, there's been rumors around that for the last like year and a half, 2 years. They trade Tristan Casas and somebody else moves into first base rather, and then opens up another, you know, a bunch of different avenues. So I think it's not going to be because either an injury happens, or it's going to be because some other trade happens for a starting pitcher, or they trade for Ketel Marte and that takes two or three guys off their roster as well. So I think you'll know before, but if you're drafting today, obviously you don't know. So still worth, you know, that's why I'm okay with drafting him in a draft and hold, because I do believe, you know, there'll be an opportunity. He will come up. But if you draft him in a fab, you're not going to want to hold on to them very long. Like you're not going to be able to do that. So you either need to know sooner rather than later, and you feel like you kind of wasted that draft pick. In a draft and hold, there's always that opportunity that he will get, you know, you will get value out of him, and you won't have to pay for it. You'll only have to pay for it in the form of a draft pick, right? So again, if I didn't use the risky pick already, the stash pick in my draft and hold, I'm okay with Kristen Campbell taking up that spot.
One more question on that really quick. He's going about a round ahead of Christian Moore. Do you agree with that?
No.
That's why I asked.
Oh,
that,
just
that
because
caught my eye a little bit.
I mean, Christian Moore is on the opening day roster and and probably, you know, granted, supposedly playing a position he's never played before. But just the fact that you're going to get potentially 162 games out of him, as opposed to probably, you know, half that with Campbell if you're lucky. So, yeah, no, probably not. But he'll gain and Christian Moore will have dual middle corner eligibility, you know, in short order, assuming he does play third base. All right, let's move on. Well, speaking of third base, let's go to third base. We'll close it out with our closers or relievers as well. Third base, again, only guys that are available at the third base position. And I know I said the first one was probably my favorite one. It probably was. This one is my favorite one just because of all the news and talk revolving in Arizona around third base. Yeah. Jordan Lawler on the list here in Arizona, assuming they don't sign an Alex Bregman type or Alex Bregman himself in Arizona, you'd expect Jordan Lawler to be the opening day third baseman for the Diamondbacks. Josh Jung and Connor Norby being your other options here. And like all the other groupings, they're all pretty much going back to back to back. Josh Jung, of course, in Texas has had his health issues. It seems as though they're not all related to each other per se, but they're still happening a lot. I left Okamoto off of this as a, you know, international free agent just because, but he is also kind of in the same grouping of where they're being drafted. Connor Norby in Miami, also expect him to be that, you know, coming over from Baltimore a couple of years ago, kind of filling that role in Miami as an everyday player. Those are your options. Jordan Lawler with all the clouds, all the haze, Connor Norby in Miami, and then Josh Jung with all of his injury history. How comfortable are you with any of these guys?
I actually like them all. This is a fun one. I think that, well, no, I know Jordan Lawler is my fab play. And once again, it's similar to Tristan Casas, not just because it's my cop out, I can get rid of him, but he's the high upside play here. So he's my fab play. The other two are closer, I think, than most people, might realize, and they are projected for approximately the same number of plate appearances, and they had about the same number of plate appearances last season, a little over 500. I think this, yeah, when I first looked at this, I thought snap that Josh Jung would be my gladiator, but I'm going with Norby just for the little bit of speed, the few stolen bases. I'll take him in my gladiator. I'll have more guys I can move in and out of my lineup in my draft and hold with Josh Jung when I need speed.
Fair enough. I mean, you have to, the injury concern has to play a role as well. And the playing time, I know you said that they're projected for similar playing time, but I don't know how much I can put stock into somebody like Josh Jung, who has had that kind of history.
It doesn't feel like he got over 500 plate appearances last year, does it? Because we loved Josh Smith so much part of the time, and Corey Seager as well. But yeah, you know, exactly. I agree with you.
And to be fair, again, doesn't seem as though they're like necessarily related injuries, and they are. Is it, mm-hmm. The problem is that he's in his short major league career, he's already established in every other scenario where he's
don't say that because he's coming last year. The wrong end of that.
Yeah, this is the wrong season. He's an odd guy. We need to stay away from him in even years. Sorry, Josh Young. We'll talk in 2027. But yeah, Norby's not, I mean, he's not exciting, but if he is, he's carved out a position. He's carved out a role. He was somebody that you kind of got, I don't know if excited is even strong enough of a word when he was coming up with Baltimore, but like he was a centerpiece of that trade going down to Miami. He was in the Trevor Rogers trade, if I'm not mistaken. And he is, you know, he took him a little bit, but he is carved out everyday playing time in that Miami lineup, even if it is at the bottom of the lineup. I do think he's got an opportunity to kind of force their hand and move up that lineup as well. So more plate appearances could actually come from that. But if you're looking for stolen bases, maybe that nine hole is where you want them.
Yeah, and he should still do pretty well in the runs category as well. Marcy, Xavier Edwards, Kyle Stowers, Agustin Ramirez, the top four in that lineup. Miami could put up some runs this year.
All right, let's close it out with guys who have either closed before or possibly could find themselves in a closer situation again. But I wouldn't say you're drafting them as such, but that could play into your strategy here of where you want to be drafting these guys. Relievers in this bucket: Jeremiah Estrada, still with San Diego, Tanner Scott in LA with the Dodgers, even with Edwin Diaz as their newest, you know, well, basically their Tanner Scott signing of this year. And then Robert Garcia still in Texas, as we talked about in our last episode, probably, you know, still the favorite, obviously, with Sean Armstrong going to Cleveland, and just the mismatch of one-year deals they're giving to a bunch of other relievers like Alexis Diaz and bringing Chris Martin back in. Robert Garcia very well could be at least the opening day closer for the Texas Ranger if they even assign that to one particular pitcher. So between Estrada, Scott, and Garcia, who do you like in each format?
This is tough. I think because of the position, it's a little different than how I would have worked through this in with any of the other position players, especially hitters, but even the starters. I think I changed my mind because it appears that Robert Garcia is the closer now. I'm going to say that this draft has taken place today. So right. Yeah, he would be my fab pick because what I'm getting at is Robert Garcia, I don't want in my lineup unless I'm getting saves.
Fair.
Tanner Scott and Jeremiah Estrada, either one, which one am I more confident in? Which one do I want in the Gladiator? Estrada, Tanner Scott, just because we saw what can happen in LA. Still, would love to have Tanner Scott on my roster, but I think I'd prefer Estrada, so I'd take him in the Gladiator. Garcia in the Fab, because right now he is a closer, so he would get drafted in a Fab league. I would think not be left on the waiver wire, and then I'd be fine with Tanner Scott in a draft and hold.
I think that's a solid way of putting it, because it's like, I think your gut is, I want the closer on my Gladiator because I know they're the closer. I need those saves. I need to bank the saves. But I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. You don't want Robert Garcia on your team, and there's absolutely no guarantee that he keeps that job all year round.
Right.
Obviously, if you knew he did, then fine. Then he's an obvious pick here because he'll get you those saves on a decent team. But the other guys are not. Well, Tanner Scott has shown that he could hurt. He can hurt you.
Yeah, absolutely.
For various reasons. But I like Estrada as well, just because of the consistency, the strikeouts, everything. And as good as Mason Miller is, I'm still going to lean on the money that there's no guarantee that San Diego gives him 100% of the saves. And Estrada could very well be that Jason Adam type that they had before, where if it's not Miller, then it's Estrada rather than Morion or David Morgan or anybody else in that bullpen. I would expect Estrada to be the guy they lean to first to kind of clear out some saves, gives Mason Miller some breathing room as well. Yeah. Especially as also as the other righty compared to Morion. Yeah. So I think I nailed it there as well. This is always a fun game, Kevin. And we could, you know, could have doubled up on a lot of these positions. It's fun because of the area of the draft that I picked the names as well, because you very well might never pick any of these guys in any of the in any of your components, but there are names that you have to start thinking about, especially if you're doing a draft and hold. It's like, all right, well, those are my options at that point. Like, oh man. So it really starts making you think about how you're going to build the first half of your draft or the first quarter of your draft. So you're not having to worry about kind of filling in, you know, those catcher options weren't great, right? Like, you don't want to have to draft any one of those catchers in a gladiator, and you don't necessarily have to. Like I said, there were, I think Sean Murphy was like the 28th or 29th. And you know what? That's more than 30. So you're going to, like, if you wait too long, you will have to pick one of those guys or somebody like them. So just lots goes into all the different formats, and you're switching between the two or three of them. This is why nobody drafts fab leagues until after the new year, because their mindset is in draft and hold. And it's like going back and forth between drafting those two different types of leagues. Is difficult to do. It's difficult to like bring yourself out of it. Well, on top of that, anything else that you can kind of close this out with, as far as, you know, how you're balancing drafting, thinking about baseball, and obviously the holidays that are all around us right now.
Yeah, no, I get pretty busy with work during the holidays with the, as you would expect, Hawaii is a popular destination over the anytime kids are not in school and families are traveling. So, yeah, I get pretty busy, and then hanging out with my wife and daughter will be awesome. Hope you have an amazing holiday season, Adam, you and your family as well. And I have an idea. I think we should revisit this exact ask game towards the end of spring training, and some of them will have answered themselves for us, but some of them we discussed what would happen.
It's true.
Like, what's going to happen in spring would affect our decision, and not an entire episode, because that time of year we have more pressing things to be discussing. But I think we should, you know, towards the end of spring training, maybe zip through this list really quick and see if anything changed.
Love it. I love it. Yep. I love the time capsule episodes type of thing.
Yeah.
Check and balance to see where we're at, because drafting, you know, like, December is way different than, like, drafting.
The first base could be a no-brainer. We could be loving Tristan Casas at that point, right? You know?
You know, Pittsburgh doesn't seem to be shy about doing stuff, so Spencer Horowitz's situation could be completely different then as well.
I think that's what I learned through this, which is amazing, right? Even through prepping for the show, I had went through all of these. When we're talking, you realize things when you're talking out loud and such. And Connor Norby and Brooks Lee, I think I probably like more than I realized I did before this episode.
Yeah, that's it's why, you know, that's why we do this. It's
exactly.
We don't even do it for the listeners, we just do it for ourselves. It's like, all right. Well, with all that and everything else, that is going to do it for episode 239 of On the Wire. I am Adam Howe on behalf of Kevin Hastings. Thanks for listening, and we bid you goodbye.